Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells.
In this segment of our show, our friend Neil Boulanger will be giving us an update on his disability work. So what's been the latest with your disabilities work?
Hi, Cam, and I'm very happy to be here. Cam, we've been really busy here at the Society. We've just released a new program. It's our Indigenous Support for Learning program. So basically, we've in partnership with the federal government, we've developed a program to get technology to Indigenous students across Canada, low income, including students living with a disability. So we have an application process that students who are attending regularly school from kindergarten to post-secondary can apply to us for a computer. And also, depending upon their needs, it could be for specific software. So we are working with communities across Canada. We put a big call out last week, and I think to date we've got over 120 applications so far from across Canada and hundreds of inquiries. So it's going to be a very, very big program. So that's one of the big things we're working on now. We're also preparing for Indigenous Disability Awareness Month, which is next month in November. We're working with Dawn Canada this year. In partnership with them. This year is their 35th anniversary, so we have a number of events that we'll be partnering with them during the month, as well as having some webinars that we're doing in relation to the Support for Student Learning program, case management services, our employment initiative, and the Registered Disability Savings Plan. So we're busy with that as well. And just day-to-day stuff. COVID has made our operations quite a bit more in request, just because of the lack of services that many of our community people we serve are experiencing now. So it's been busy.
So in terms of the webinars you mentioned, the ongoing programs, I'm guessing this would be done with accessibility in mind so that someone with a disability could partake.
Absolutely. So right now, we just had a meeting yesterday, and so the information should be coming out this week, hopefully by tomorrow, and I think we have the first webinar scheduled for, I think, the second week of November, and part of the sign-up process is to identify if you have accommodation, so whether that's ASL, LSQ, or captioning, so we want to make sure that it's reaching the highest number of people and that everyone who wants to can participate, so absolutely.
So the program for getting technology for students with disabilities, are there any challenges associated with that?
Well, it's getting the word out, right? So we've contacted all the teachers' associations across Canada. We've sent it to government agencies. We've sent it to universities. We've sent it to our communities, First Nation, Inuit, Métis, all across Canada. It's available on our website. So we're still in the process of trying to get it as far out as we can. We're going to be working further with Indigenous Services Canada to see if they can get it out to through their mailing list. And we're just asking our partners as well to send it as widely as possible. So we've got a really good response from Western Canada. We haven't had that much uptake from Eastern Canada, and we see that as a problem because when we put the program together, we allocated, you know, a certain amount of computers by each province and territory. So we want to make sure that if there are people that need those, if there's that, to make sure that they can continue and be successful in their studies, we want to make sure that we can give them support where we can. So that's the biggest challenge right now, is making sure it's really well known. We've got, like I said, we've got probably about 120 applications so far in about a week and a half. So we're off to a good start, but the other problem is it's time limited. So we have to have this program wrapped up by the end of this fiscal year, which is March 31st. So time is of the essence. The other problem is, with COVID, we put our first order of 500 laptops in, but they told us it might take up to 100 days before the order is filled. So we've asked them to send them in increments of 100. So hopefully there's no delays there. It's interesting, and yesterday we got about 13 applications in an hour or so. It's good. It's obviously a need.
So you mentioned your services have been relied upon more heavily with the whole COVID situation. Has there been any success where you've been able to provide support to someone?
Well, we're always providing support, and we have a great team here. So they're often able to meet and exceed the needs of the people that ask for our services here. But you know, some of the things with many of our communities have partially or fully shut down, and which is understandable due to COVID and the vulnerability of their elders there, who are often the knowledge and language keepers, the cultural keepers. So what that means is that people are not necessarily getting out of their community as much as they used to, and access external services. So we have concerns about that as well. But all in all, I mean, everybody that comes to us, we still have isolation protocols in place in the office here. So you're required to maintain social distancing with anybody who comes in and wear a mask and, you know, disinfecting. But so that's been reduced a bit, but there are some things that we have to have face-to-face with the clients. We're still doing what we do. It's better now that we're back in the office. Where before, a few months ago, we were rotating staff in and some were working at home, it's just better for the people we serve that we're actually here and being able to be of support when they need it.
So, with all the recent happenings and all the initiatives, what would you like the community to know about what's available to them and how they should go about it?
Well, I'd like to talk to all the disabled persons organizations and civil society organizations across Canada, because I think we talked about this before, Cam. We're the lead secretariat organization in monitoring the CRPD in Canada, the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. So we are working with organizations, national, provincial, local, across Canada in preparation for Canada's second review of the CRPD and their compliance with it. So unfortunately, like everything else, COVID has caused the UN to delay and push back reviews of state parties like Canada. So we're not sure when the second review will be happening. We were in Geneva last fall and met with the committee prior to COVID and presented our list of issues prior to reporting. Some of the, you know, those are the highlighting some of the concerns that we have that are happening in Canada as they relate to the articles and as they relate to the concluding observations of the UN from Canada's last review. So we submitted that, and the UN looked at that, and then with that document and other information, they questioned Canada, and they gave Canada their list of issues prior to reporting in November of last year. So typically Canada would have probably replied by April, but there's been no reply yet, and that's again because of COVID. It's pushed everything back, but we're cast to continue, because if things clear up, if there's a vaccine and all of a sudden things get back on track, we have to be ready as civil society and disabled persons organizations to respond and move forward to what Canada will say, and also address some of the concerns that the UN put towards Canada. So we're working on that. But what we're trying to do as well, Cammy, is try to encourage as many organizations who are interested and want involved in monitoring of the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities in Canada to get a hold of us. and participate. And that could be as much or as little as they feel they can contribute. But all, you know, because we want to hear about the barriers, we want to hear about the concerns, we want to make sure that when we put in that document, and of course it's limited in what we can put in, that as many priorities that we can are brought to the UN's attention. And so people want to be involved, or organizations want to be involved, then they should go to our website and look at the page for the monitoring the UN convention, and email us and get your names on the list, and we'll follow up with them.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Thanks, Cam.
Of course. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Tia Fro, who will be telling us a little bit about her experience with service dogs. So tell me a little bit about your experiences with service dogs.
Okay, so my dog, so technically she's not exactly a service dog. She was bred, raised, and trained from Pacific Assistance Dog Society in Burnaby, BC, because she works with more than one person. And provides a service to more than one person. Technically, she doesn't get the service dog recognition, but she's a facility dog that works with the Regina Police Service, assisting primarily children in their interviews with the police, as well as going to court.
So I'm guessing this would have a positive mental health effect on them when they've just been through a difficult or traumatic experience.
Definitely, which is the exact reason that we use her in those specific situations. Typically, whether they're a child or an adult, they're coming to talk about some of the most intimate and traumatic incidents possibly of their lives to essentially a stranger. And so basically we're trying to take something from the home. You know, lots of people have pets, kids have pets, they love their pets. And so when you've got all that worry and anxiety coming in of what's going to happen next, what are you going to have to talk about, seeing a smiling face of a non-judgmental dog meeting you at the door definitely lightens things a lot when they first enter our center. And obviously the reason, you know, the studies show that the mere presence of the dogs can help relieve with your blood pressure and, can help with all of that, with everything that you don't even know is happening with the presence of the dog near you.
So, I'm guessing the more calm or relaxed the child is in discussing these issues, the more likely they are to be honest about them as well.
I guess not necessarily, I wouldn't say being honest, because I think the children that we speak to, for the most part, are being honest. I think they're just less reluctant. They're more able to tell their story, because really, when you go, if you've been involved in a traumatic event, you don't even realize that what's going on in the background in your own body when you go to tell the police about that incident. So the dog is helping relieve all of those, you know, with your blood pressure and your stress levels, and you're able to give a more in-depth statement, I guess would be a better way of putting it.
So I'm guessing the dog can also help with the initial shock that might come with a trauma, just having something positive and relaxed to focus on, such as
Right. And sometimes, like, we don't typically see anyone, it not to say it doesn't happen, there's been times when we see somebody right after an event has occurred. We typically see people, it could be, you know, days, weeks, months, years after an event has happened, but no matter when the event has happened, the presence of the dog definitely takes away a lot of the pressure and the worrisome thoughts that people have when they have to come in and talk about difficult things.
Are there any challenges in the use of the dog when it comes to providing that emotional support?
Well, we definitely need to make sure when we become involved, I always make sure that whoever has had first contact with that child or adult, make sure that that individual likes dogs, right? Has no fears or phobias, that they aren't, there's no allergies when it comes to dogs. And the number of times we have a lot of people who say, yeah, I am allergic to dogs, but I still want the dog present. So you want to make sure that's covered off first, because you don't want somebody that's been involved in a traumatic event and you assume that they are going to like dogs and they might be scared of dogs, and then they are greeted by a dog. That wouldn't be the best way to start off your meeting. But aside from that, really, I guess the challenges are just trying to balance time, right? She's one dog in a department, and the need and demand for her is so high that trying to prioritize and balance a timeline to try to make sure that she can be with the people that need her the most.
So, in your time doing this work and seeing the support provided, has there been any success story that stands out for you?
Oh man, I always say, I think if we can eliminate some of the stress and anxiety from a child, like, everyone is a success story. But I can think of there's a couple examples of individuals who, you know, got here but just shut down and didn't want to talk. They had met with the investigators initially. We weren't involved, and they just did not want to go to the interview room. And so the investigators had called us to see if we were free to come by and just meet with the child. It was a child in both incidents, and it just changed. Like, everybody couldn't believe how it just changed the whole dynamics of the situation, the body language, everything, and then how the child began to speak just in that initial greeting, and then was able to go and both of them were able to go and continue on, do the interview and full disclosure of everything that had happened.
So if you could send any message to the community about the need for services such as this to provide emotional and, in some cases, I would imagine, physical supports to those who need it after a traumatic incident, what would you say?
I would say if your police department does not have a facility dog, contact your department, ask them about it. Usually things start from our community, the need for something, and it's our community that we are here to serve. So what is going to best suit our community members when they are involved in things such as traumatic events like this? And so try to bring it up that, you know, how beneficial it would be to have a dog working in every department. Obviously, I'm a huge supporter of it. I think I would love to see every police department have at least one facility dog on site, and however you use it, whether it's for children, for everyone, for your just in-house, for police officers after critical incidents. But I think just the benefit overall is huge, and sometimes people don't know it until they see it. And so if the community is demanding it, they'll obviously see that how important it is to have.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yeah, you bet.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Blood donors are needed now as much as ever. If you would like to help meet the needs of patients across Canada, please consider booking an appointment by calling 1-800-DONATE, visiting blood.ca, or through the Give Blood app. The Windsor Blood Donor Centre is located at 3909 Grand Maris Road East. Please note that extra safety precautions have been taken during this time, and only healthy individuals with a scheduled appointment will be allowed to donate blood.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Neil Boulanger about his latest disabilities work to get accessible technology in the hands of Aboriginal students with disabilities, and much more. And from Tia Froh, who mentioned about the benefits of support dogs for children who have undergone emotional traumas.
In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Thea Taylor from GFC. So tell me a little bit about the Grace Cares ministry.
Well, Grace Cares is a ministry that encompasses a lot of different parts of caring for people. So we have a component that's meeting people's physical needs during COVID, during the times of COVID, their food, their bill, utility bills, and things like that. And then it is also encompasses different parts within the church, our lay counseling ministry, our Grace Disabilities, which is our disabilities ministry, the prayer ministry, all falls under the umbrella of Grace Cares.
So, can you give me an overview of the disabilities ministry in particular?
Sure. We do anything and everything to help people affected by disability and their families be as much involved in the church as they want to be and as they can be, so that they have the same access as everyone else. So we have a Buddies ministry that focuses on children and young adults. So while their parents go to church, we go with them into the children's ministry and provide extra support so that they can stay in class. We also have a buddy room where if they are not able to be in the classroom, we can take them, and we have cool sensory things for them to do in there while their parents are in service. Go ahead, you have a question?
Yes, just wondering, what types of conditions do you most commonly see among those with disabilities?
We pretty much run the gamut. We have individuals who have purely physical disabilities, like cerebral palsy, spinal cord injuries. We have a lot of individuals who have autism. We have some individuals with intellectual disabilities and Down syndrome. Basically, if it exists, we've probably seen some shape or form of it in our building at any given time. A lot of our adults and our teens, they do their own separate worship, or they have it available. So if they can't handle the big environment of the auditorium, we have their own service in a separate room that's less stimulating and provides a simplified message. So a lot of those individuals have cognitive disabilities.
So are there any challenges in providing ministry to those with intellectual or cognitive disabilities?
I wouldn't say challenges. It's just you have to be more creative to break down the concepts so that they're more concrete and they can understand. So we do a lot of interactive question and answer type things. We do a lot of visual, so a lot of video clips and visual readings where they can see it on the screen and follow along instead of just the auditory talking.
So, to look at the converse side of things, in your time with this work and this ministry, has there been any success story that stands out for you?
Let's see. I've been in this ministry for about the last 2.5-3 years as a staff member. I was a volunteer before in our ministry. I don't know what type of success story you're looking for. Can you give me a little more?
Maybe a time you were able to think creatively to support someone with a disability, just to get them engaged in the church.
Well, yeah, a lot in our worship, our Friends Worship Service, which is the worship for individuals with disabilities, and in our Bible study that we teach, we are able to engage them through things like pantomime and acting out stories and acting out situations, a lot of videos, so that they're learning the same concept. So our individuals, if you ask them a question about the Bible, some of them can, and most of them, can answer the question to the degree because they've learned from the teaching.
So how do you go about reaching out to people about this work?
We do some community outreach activities. One of our community outreach activities is called Rest Day, and that is free respite that we provide to families with disabilities in the community. They don't have to necessarily be a part of our church, and we reach out through the schools, through social workers, things like that. But the parents can bring their children, drop them off for 3 hours of free respite so they can go have a date while we entertain and care for their children. And that reaches about 75 to 80 families 4 times a year.
So,
well, before COVID, it was 4 times a year.
So in terms of those providing respite, are they just volunteers within the church?
Yep, they're volunteers from our church and from the community. Some have experience in special education, physical therapy. We have a whole medical team that takes care of all of the medical needs of the individuals. We have a lot of teachers that volunteer.
So, if you could send any message to the community about the need for equal inclusion of persons with disabilities in ministry, what would you say?
I would say, don't be afraid. Don't be intimidated. Everybody deserves the same opportunities and the same chances. Don't be afraid to ask questions. There's no bad question if you're asking it in the appropriate way. That's how you're going to learn to provide the same environment that we provide here at Grace.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
My friends, I was greatly pleased to hear about the work of GFC, for the fact is, many people with disabilities can find comfort and strength when it comes to their spiritual lives. Some cultures do consider disability a curse or the work of evil spirits or what have you. But the fact is, people with disabilities are simply people. People who, yeah, might move a little differently or speak a little differently or think a little differently. That does not make them less worthy of life, less worthy of that consideration. They should be given every chance to explore their strengths. And, as we heard from Tia, they should have a chance to be comfortable and free to express that, especially when dealing with something a little bit harder. But the fact is, no one person has the right to underestimate the strength of another, or to say, I've taken from you the light that is your life. You're still capable, you're still strong, and you still have something to offer this world. No matter what you've been through, the future is yours to create. And when people come together with a united vision and a united goal to make sure people with disabilities have the best chance succeed and to thrive in this world. In this way, we all profit. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you, we're all equal, so get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.